Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Tuesday the 1st of May. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Tom Morgan. Tonight on the show, we reflect on the activism to decriminalise homosexuality in Australia as we look back at Tasmania, the last state to do so, who today celebrate 21 years since the decriminalisation of consensual homosexual acts in private. We find out about the Equality Project Training Academy, with courses around the country specialising in leadership and media training for LGBTIQ community advocates, change makers and emerging leaders. And we head to Queensland's Sunshine Coast, where the Sunshine Coast Rainbow Families Group will be meeting in person for the first time this weekend, helping to create a strong rainbow community in the area.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
South Australia was the first Australian state to decriminalise homosexuality, and it took the last remaining state, Tasmania, 22 years to follow suit. Though the law didn't take effect until May 13th in 1997, on May 1st, 21 years ago, the High Court made its ruling, with state laws being struck down and passing gay law reform in Tasmania. No longer would LGBT people face the fear and stigma that sex between consenting adults in private could have them face up to 21 years in jail. Now, with LGBT rights advocate and academic Rodney Croom, who not only took to the High Court to fight the law with his partner, but was also a key part in the campaign to decriminalise homosexuality in Tasmania, we reflect on the past, which was not that long ago. Join us now as we look back with audio from Tasmanian news reports looking at Croom's fight and the highs and lows of public opinion.
We've been campaigning for 9 years. 9 years to have these laws repealed. And there have been times when we didn't really think it would ever happen. Certainly not this century. And it really is the most tremendous thing for it to happen.
Some of us, heterosexuals who have homosexual friends, believe it's a very important social justice issue. The rest of the country doesn't have this law. Why should we remain with it? It's ridiculous.
And we're told right around the spectrum that it's homosexuals and bisexuals and their activity that are helping to spread the disease.
So you find the idea of men having sex with men or women having sex with women quite offensive?
I do. I'm quite normal. Thank goodness.
It was a pretty bad situation. Even though the laws against homosexuality hadn't been enforced since the early 80s, still there was a very heavy criminal stigma that hung over all LGBTI people. That had a number of different impacts. I mean, it meant that we couldn't interact with the government. We couldn't sort of have an input into government policy. It meant that it was really hard to try and enact other reforms that were necessary, like anti-discrimination legislation. That had to wait until the criminal law was reformed. So Tasmania was the last state on that as well. And, of course, it meant that a lot of particularly young LGBTI people felt very oppressed in Tasmania, and many of them left, and quite a few took their own lives. And there was a spate of young gay men suiciding on the northwest coast of Tasmania in the 1990s, which led in turn to the establishment of Working It Out, which continues to be Tasmania's LGBTI support organisation. So it had some pretty dire consequences.
We're here because gay men in Tasmania are still criminals, and the High Court has the power to change that.
When I came out, I was warned by other gay men that the police would be waiting outside gay community meetings to take down my car registration number and other people as well, to put on a list of known homosexuals. When we first started campaigning for decriminalisation, of course, we had a little stall in Salamanca Market, and the council banned that stall and brought in the police to arrest us all. Other Tasmanians may have felt that they were living in a democracy, but for LGBTI people, Tasmania was a police state.
It's a very sad day for Tasmania. I think it's a very black day for Tasmania, and I believe it's going to be some time before the politicians in this state realise the damage they've done to Tasmania.
It's been a very, very difficult debate and it's good to get it out of the way. I think there will be some negative reaction in the Tasmanian community, but if they give the law a chance, in 2 or 3 months it'll be settled and we will be a better society as a result of this bill passing.
It wasn't about any particular political party. The Liberal Party was very stridently against decriminalisation for quite a while, even though it ended up being a Liberal Party that the reform was finally achieved under. But there was also a very strong contingent within the Labor Party that were against that reform and had blocked it for many years. So it was something deeper than just partisan politics. There was very low visibility for LGBTI people in Tasmania. When I first came out, the only publicly identified gay person on the island was Bob Brown. He came out in the mid-70s. There was no one else. And there was still a misconception amongst many Tasmanians that if you were gay, you left. And if you stayed, then you just stayed deeply in the closet. And that was certainly the experience a lot of the gay people I knew then, that they were very deeply in the closet because of these really repressive attitudes. Different people have tried to explain why Tasmania was so repressive for so long, why it was, as I said before, a police state if you were gay. And quite a few people point to our convict past. In the 19th century, there was a great deal of hysteria and fear about homosexuality amongst the convicts, particularly the male convicts, but also amongst the women. And to such an extent that prisons were purpose-built to keep men who were convicted of homosexuality away from each other. And women were deliberately separated if it was found that they were in a relationship. And when the convict system came to an end, because of the efforts of the anti-transportationists, they were just as bad in perpetuating stigma. Their big rhetorical weapon against the convict system was to say that it bred so-called unnatural vice. And various historians and writers, from Babette Smith right through to Robert Hughes, have made this link and said that hysterical fear about homosexuality in 19th century Australia, particularly around the convict system, and particularly in Tasmania, has left a terrible legacy of homophobia that has only in the last couple of decades begun to clear.
And a citizen of Hobart and a citizen of the state of Tasmania and a citizen of the Commonwealth of Australia, I do not believe that I have any need to leave South America.
You refuse to leave this area. You are now under arrest for trespass.
It was always a risk when we took to the streets, as we did. There were a series of anti-gay rallies in Tasmania in 1989 and then again in 1994. And busloads of people would go from Hobart and Launceston to these rallies. And we would have vigils outside. And beforehand, we would go around the streets of the particular town, handing out materials and asking people to talk to us. And there was always a risk. And I remember one occasion in Ulverston, after a particularly inflammatory anti-gay rally, where people were chanting, kill them, kill them. We were confronted by a group of teenage boys with cricket bats. The only thing that stood between us and them was a camera crew from A Current Affair. And there was a very tense moment when it looked like that we might all be subject to violence, but in the end, common sense prevailed and the boys took off because I guess they didn't want to be on national television. There were many occasions like that where it got quite hairy, and we always needed to make sure that we stayed calm, that we stayed rational, that we stayed violent, which we did right throughout. I think that's to our great credit.
Sex activities were quite detailed and were more than sufficient, I think, to indict us under these laws.
There were other actions that we planned which were also a little scary, for instance, turning ourselves into the police in 1994 to try and bring the debate back to the issue of the laws in Tasmania. Debate that had been precipitated by the UN finding that the Tasmanian laws breached international human rights standards. And we did that by filling out statutory declarations and handing them in to the police, outlining our illegal sexual activity. As I've already said, the police were pretty heavy-handed in Tasmania, and so it was like walking into the lion's den. But it was something we knew we had to do, because we had to highlight the hypocrisy of these laws that weren't being enforced, but still were being kept on the books as a way to stigmatise LGBTI people.
Not only are these laws going to disappear, but they're going to disappear without any compromises or caveats or qualifications.
That was a momentous day for all of us, because it was a culmination of a decade of campaigning and of taking great risks and of huge efforts by many people. And I was very happy, but I remember thinking, even on that day, that it was only the beginning, not the end, of what needed to be done. And I was very proud that in the years after that, Tasmania went on to adopt some of the best anti-discrimination and relationship laws in Australia. And the work that we did in the 90s, I think, laid the groundwork for a much more tolerant and inclusive Tasmania, as shown in the results of the postal survey on marriage equality last year, where Tasmania came out near the top in terms of the states that voted yes, which is a result that no one would have expected 20 years ago, no one at all. So, yeah, that was a kind of vindication of our work and something I'm very proud of. And I'm very proud, too, that a lot of the things that we learnt in Tasmania in the 90s, me and others took into the marriage equality campaign. Ideas like, you know, the importance of personal stories for changing hearts and minds, the importance of not compromising and not giving up, the importance of reaching out to people, and the importance of being defiant when you knew that prejudice had to be confronted. All those things featured, particularly in the earlier years of the marriage equality campaign, and I think laid the groundwork for Australia voting so strongly for that reform last year.
That was LGB rights advocate and academic Rodney Croom reflecting on past advocacy in Tasmania, where he and his partner went through the High Court and 21 years ago struck down the laws allowing homosexuality to no longer be criminalised.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Earlier this year, the Better Together conference in Melbourne allowed LGBTIQ Australians to come together and have a platform to share ideas and experiences, asking the hard questions about how, or if, we can move forward and tackle what's important as a collective community. In the lead up to the national conference, the Equality Project hosted a leadership training academy, specialising in leadership and media training for LGBTIQ community advocates, changemakers and emerging leaders. And now they are going around the country and continuing leadership training in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane and Canberra, with Perth, Adelaide and Hobart soon to be announced. Dean Arcuri spoke to Jason Tuazone McChain from the Equality Project about this leadership training, how it was inspired and the future of the Better Together conference.
So I went to Creating Change conference in America a couple of years ago, and before their conference they held leadership training institutes for 1, 2, 3 days. And thought that was a really good idea to get people ready for a conference, but also to bring, you know, LGBTIQ advocates and workers together from the different spaces and have a chance to develop some skills, but also network. And so we held a 2-day leadership training academy that Mercer hosted for us before Better Together, and 110 people attended, and we had another 40 or 50 who wanted to go. We didn't have room. And it was a wonderful thing to see 110 really diverse people share a space for 2 days and share in some public forums and some smaller groups, and also participate in the GLAAD Media Institute and just have a really good time. And you know, it wasn't perfect. Like, we did a pizza with a line approach to it because of the first one. And you know, there's some people, particularly in the trans space, we had, I think, 20 trans people there's some people in our spaces who are not comfortable in big groups. And so we'll take that into account next time. But it was just a really part of the bigger mix of trying to provide cost affordable, best practice leadership training experience and a networking opportunity at the same time. That's why we did it. I think it was a temperature setter and helped change the conversation in the sense that people were in a positive mindset, had already had some good experience of being together. And then those 100 people fed into the conference itself. So interestingly, probably 25% of the people who came for training came to the conference, and it was almost 70% of the participants were not from Melbourne or Sydney metro areas. So it was really an amazing thing. Like, it was really diverse and really beautiful, and I hope we'll capture that again with our next training academies.
The Equality Project are continuing their schedule of leadership training around Australia, following its success at Better Together earlier this year, helping to develop the capacity and skill of emerging Australian LGBTIQ community leaders. With so many voices advocating for so many different things, why is it so important to provide this kind of training for advocates in these spaces?
It's important because we don't have enough opportunity to come out of our own silos and do collaborative work or to network and understand what other people are doing, and also to understand that our own marginalisation is no superior to anyone else's. So having this, you know, group of very diverse people, from some really skilled, mature, long-term advocates and some brand new ones, was a really good chance to go, oh, this is what we look like, and how do we, you know, find out about each other and what we're doing and share some vulnerability amongst ourselves. And that was really, you know, really powerful and really valuable. It's really important, and I, you know, all of us need, I even did my own personal leadership for day experience as part of another organisation the first part of this year, and it was really helpful just to have that time to reflect and make some new connections. And, you know, that's what life's about. And the whole idea around Equality Project and even the Better Together Conference is that we are better together. And, you know, even though there are schisms and different things happening in our spaces, we can only get where we need to go if we work more collaboratively, if we want to get there faster. We'll get there eventually, but it's a lot easier if we don't keep reinventing the wheels. And, you know, the other thing we've tried not to do is to draw from the same wells that everybody is trying to get funds from. So we, you know, our partners and the people who have contributed to allow us to do things are new areas and new people and new organisations. That's the plan. So the goal with the Training Academy is to, we've already done that, you know, 100 and something people through, but is to have somewhere between, you know, 600 and 1,000 people undertake that and then go deeper and then offer a deeper experience to the phase two level. And that's all exciting, but the hard work is just trying to lock things in, and we're trying to keep it affordable. So instead of having to pay $500 to $700 for a two-day training experience, people are going to pay between $150 and $250, and that includes food as well. So, you know, it's really important that it's not expensive and that, you know, we're providing for 20% to come at little or no cost. So we're going to take it to Sydney, bring it back to Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, Adelaide and Canberra, and hopefully Hobart, all in between October and November this year. So we've got a 240-person event up in Sydney in mid-October, and we have Ross from GLAAD will come out again and provide the Media Training Institute as one component. Benjamin Moore will do a workshop in Sydney, amongst others. And then in Melbourne, we'll have a two-day thing for 80 persons. And we already have someone who's funding the scholarship. So 20% of all the spaces are on scholarship. And so people can apply for those. And we've already got somebody who's donated the fund for those 16 people in Melbourne. We'll have space for 25 or so in Brisbane and the same in Perth and Adelaide over those six-week period. And it's just exciting to go around, and they will signpost the next Better Together conference. So we've just locked in that we will hold the second one in Sydney on January 10 and 11 at UTS, University of Technology in Sydney, next January. It's a space that holds... The aerial space holds about 500 people in five different spaces, and we've got a main hall on the first day that holds up to 800 people. And so we'll have exciting to have a Better Together in Sydney. And then I think the plan is to try and go to Adelaide the year after and then come back to Melbourne for the Pride Centre opening time.
Standing up and fighting for your rights is one thing, but for many in our community, stepping into the role of leadership can seem daunting, even if it's a role that they're already in, simply by advocating for their community rights. Even if you're unsure if the Leadership Training Academy is for you, or if you're unsure that you have what it takes to be a part of such a program, then we would like you to stop and have a look again.
Look, if you're feeling a bit insecure or you feel like, you know, you're not confident to come into a space like this, I promise you it's a safe space. It's a safe space for LGBTIQ advocates and people, and it's for anyone of any level. So you can be a beginner or a long-time mature advocate, and you'll have something valuable to receive out of it by connecting with the people who are there and engaging in, you know, the program. And the GLAAD Media Institute itself is worth attending on its own, and that's basically 6 hours of the 2 days. And so please, we'll try our very best to make it as valuable as it can be, recognising that, you know, there are big numbers attending. So please come along. It's going to be a great experience. You can register for Melbourne and Sydney already online. You just go to theequalityproject.org.au and the links are there. And we have an early bird price of $149 for the two-day experiences in Melbourne or in Sydney. And it includes lunch and morning tea and afternoon tea for both days. And they're both in the Melbourne and Sydney CBD areas. So get along and register now because we will sell out. And if you don't have any money and you want to come, we have scholarship provisions and a process online as well. So go to the website for that.
That was Dean Arcuri with Jason Tuazone McChain from the Equality Project. And you can find out more details about applying for the leadership training around Australia via our social media.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Sunshine Gold Coast LGBTIQ families and their allies will come together to celebrate International Family Equality Day this weekend, which is also the first official meet-up event for Rainbow Families Sunshine Coast. Dina Curie spoke to co-convener Holly Zwolf about how the group has evolved from supporting each other on social media to coming together in person this weekend, and why it's so important to create an inclusive and comfortable space for every single member of a rainbow family, from the kids to the parents, so that everyone can feel welcome and accepted.
There's a Rainbow Family Sunshine Coast Facebook group that I think it's been active since maybe 2009, 2010, but hasn't really taken off as far as social meetups go. So they were having, I think in 2009, 2010, there was a small group of people on the Sunshine Coast who were campaigning around the right to get both parents listed on a birth certificate, to have birth certificates reissued. So they came together on that, but since then, nothing really has been going on formally. And so I moved to the Sunshine Coast late last year from Sydney with my child and joined the group. And all of a sudden, just four of us out of nowhere were like, let's do something, let's actually make this happen. And we've all become admins of the group and it's really taking off. There's just a lot of energy for it with new people around, I think. Basically, you know, we're on the Facebook group every now and then someone would post saying, hi, I've just moved to the area, when do we meet up? No one would really answer. Eventually, one of the women said, I'm going to organise a meetup. And so she picked the date, the 6th, which is this Sunday. And everyone just came out of the woodwork and said, yes, I really want this to happen. I'm so excited. So we had a presence at Pride Fair Day, which was on Sunday last week in Nambour. We had a marquee and a Rainbow Families banner that Rainbow Families New South Wales sent up for us. And we had so many people coming and dropping by. So many people. I think the interesting thing about the Sunshine Coast is that a lot of people seem to move here. They have their, you know, they live in big cities and then they decide to have a family and so they move somewhere like the Sunshine Coast to raise their kids. So there's actually a lot more of us than I realised. So I think it's going to really take off. This Sunday, it's our first ever monthly meetup. So we're going to have a Love Makes a Family banner hanging up in the park at Landsborough Pioneer Park from 10 to 12. And I think this being the first one, a lot of it's going to be putting faces to names because some of us have been talking on social media already and so we'll be getting to, you know, say hi in person. And I think this is the beginning of something that's going to continue. I think we're going to have not just monthly meetups, but there's talk of setting up a weekly play group because there's so much interest and so much energy for it at the moment here. So I feel like it's just going to keep on growing. And there's so many more rainbow families on the Sunshine Coast than I realised. So hopefully it's going to bring people out of the woodwork, which will be lovely. I had a friend contact me a couple of days ago and she grew up on the Sunshine Coast and she is now a queer parent herself. And she said that just watching on Facebook, seeing these events starting up where she grew up and, you know, her experience of growing up in this area was it was intensely homophobic. She couldn't be out. Her family weren't supportive of her. And she said it is just making her feel so, I don't know what the word is, so hopeful and so buoyed up to see that how things are changing and how this community is growing here. And yeah, it's really positive.
When we think rainbow families, it's easy to simply think of the children, to coin a popular phrase. And it's important that we do. Helping to create a supportive and inclusive environment for young LGBTI people can make all the difference in their later lives. And it's their families that help with that. But it's not just about the children. It's about the parents and siblings as well. Sometimes I think we're used to this narrative that becoming who we are is something we have to do alone. But rainbow families include LGBTI parents as well as the children and siblings. And as families, they come together to support each other and strengthen the message that it's okay to be different. Because who you are is who you are.
It's so important for our kids, first of all. I really want my child to know that he's a part of a special group that only kids who have families like he does can go to. I want it to be a really positive space for him where he can be around other kids who have a shared experience to him, and so it can feel like a special exciting thing, you know. I think for the parents, just having that sense of community is so essential, especially when you're living somewhere semi-rural like we are. We're not connected into a major city. We don't have access to the services and the immediate community that you have in major cities in Australia. So even just knowing that there are other people in the area is so helpful for things like, you know, when you're starting school, for sharing information about what services are queer friendly in the area, and for visibility as well. You know, I mean, there's nothing more lonely than walking down the street and never seeing anyone who reflects your family and your life. And so coming together once a month to see other families like mine is just, it makes me feel so much stronger. Oh, it's absolutely for the parents as well. I mean, even just coming to Pride Fair Day last week and just being physically around other people, it made me feel so much more connected and so much more supported. You know, my child started daycare 2 months ago and that was terrifying for me because I went in there and I was the only queer parent in the daycare centre, and, you know, I'm kind of trailblazing there. I'm having to educate them, having to talk about how to navigate things like Mother's Day and Father's Day, and making sure they have books that represent our family in their, you know, their library and everything. And that was really lonely. And when you come face to face with other families who are going through the same thing just down the road from you, you don't feel lonely anymore. You feel like you have a community and it's supportive. Yeah.
That was Holly Zwolf, co-convener of Rainbow Families Sunshine Coast, who will be meeting at Pioneer Park in Landsborough this Sunday, May 6th, from 10 a.m. to 12 midday. You can find out more about Rainbow Families Sunshine Coast via their Facebook group, and you can join in future meetups and help to grow the Sunshine Coast Rainbow community.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
And that's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip that you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Tom Morgan.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.